Welcome to the Savvy Girl Podcast.
I'm Deborah, and I'm the sister who knits.
And I'm Melanie, and I'm the sister who doesn't.
Melanie?
I mean, I like to...
That's a lie. People, Melanie does knit. She just won't admit it.
I do not.
Yes,
I hate knitting.
Yes, you do.
Okay. But anyway, let's get this show on the road.
Yeah, let's get going.
And I say, wait, hey, it's just an ordinary day, and it's all your state of mind. At the end of the day, you just got to say it's all right.
So today is July 25th, and it's a very, very special day.
And that is because...
Well, it's my birthday!
Happy birthday!
Happy birthday, Deborah! I'm wishing myself a happy birthday.
Well, no one else is there to do it.
It's true. Today I've been in a really good mood, but leading up to my birthday, I was kind of gloomy because I was worried that, you know, I'm away from my family and my friends and I don't know too many people here. Well, I know some people, but not too many. But today has started and I'm feeling really good.
And on some people on their birthday, they drink too much and some people, they eat cake all day. But no, not my sister. Instead, she went on a...
I went on a yarn spree. I set my alarm this morning and I got up and I took the bus to the Yarn District, and I cannot stop talking about this area because it is that good. So I bought a lot, actually. Probably the equivalent of 3.5 kilograms of yarn. No, 4 kilograms of yarn. What's that in pounds, Mel?
It's 2.2, so that'd be about 9.
I bought 9 pounds of yarn. But it actually didn't end up costing me that much. Oh, you're not answering me, Mel.
I thought you were still talking about yarn.
Oh, well, I am. But I thought you'd make, like, at least signals of interest.
Oh, ooh. Ooh. Did you have a yarngasm? Were you that excited?
Well, it was pretty close. The winter season started a little while ago here, so I'm familiar already with what they have in the yarn stores for the season. So it's not like there were any surprises, but I bought some roving to spin in sort of a pink and cream color, and I'm taking part in an exchange. So basically, people, you know, they pull names and then you buy a present for the person. It's like a secret Santa,
but it's your
but
birthday
for no reason at all, just because people like getting presents and people like buying presents. So I bought, and I'm not going to say what I bought or who I have in the exchange, because I think this person may tune into the podcast now and then.
Is this a coworker? What is this exchange?
It's on Ravelry.
Oh, okay.
Everything's from Ravelry. It's taken over the knitting world.
So did you get this person some nice chocolates?
Well, no, I didn't buy the chocolates. Clearly, I bought yarn. Don't be silly. And then I have a friend who's getting married, my friend Kira. And I'm pretty sure she doesn't listen to the podcast, so I think I'm safe. She's getting married in September, and I wanted to make her an afghan for her wedding present. And I figure that can be something nice for the couple to cuddle under, and et cetera, et cetera. So I picked a pattern from one of my Manos del Uruguay books, and then I went to the store. And the pattern calls for 8 different colors and 200 grams of each color. But the skeins of the yarn that I like the best here, it's 100% wool. It's similar to the Manos del Uruguay or to Malabrigo, and the colors are really pretty. They come in 200-gram hanks, and because the pattern calls for exactly 200 grams of each of them, I always like to knit my afghans a little bit longer and a little bit wider, because the less you have exposed to the cold, the better it is. Especially if it's for two people, then I want it to be big enough. So I ended up buying 400 grams of each of the 8 colors. And so it was made for a very, very big bag of yarn and a lot of knitting ahead, I guess. And did I buy anything else? Oh, yes. And I've started knitting. Well, do you want to do some talking, Mel?
You're doing quite well. It's your birthday.
Okay. Well, okay, thanks. So remember the yarn I was talking about in, I think it was episode 2, it was the llama, the thick, thin llama?
I didn't listen to that part.
Okay. Okay, well, there was a thick, thin llama that I discussed in episode 2, and I've started knitting that into a jacket. It's called the Sophisticated Rustic Jacket, and it's an interweave knits pattern. I found it on the internet, and it's a fitted jacket with buttons up the front and a sort of a simple rounded collar. Oh, and it's done all in garter stitch. And the garter stitch seems to work really well with thick, thin yarn, obviously, because there's already a lot of texture in it. And then garter stitch is textured as well. It makes for sort of a nice, a nice soft stretchy fabric. Anyways, I'm more than halfway up the back of that jacket, and today I imagine that today I am going to start doing the armhole shaping. So that's going well, and I have, I guess, a new afghan to cast on soon, because it's due by September 12th.
Although, according to etiquette, you have a year to give her a present.
That's true. Exactly. If I get it done, I get it done. If not, then she'll get it a couple months later. But I'm really excited about that project. It's really pretty. Well, guess what I'm doing this afternoon?
I don't care. It's my turn to talk.
Okay, go ahead. Well, you had a story to tell.
I thought first I could talk about, since it's your birthday today, I already gave you a present.
You did. Let me get it. I'm going to reach down here.
Okay, and it was the best present ever because it's a gift that keeps on giving back to me.
Back to you? Why don't you tell people about it?
Okay, I was in my grandmother's house, and she's a knitter also, and I found the best pattern for a hat. And I would tell you about this pattern, but I promptly put it in the mail, wrapped it up like a present, and put it in the mail to Deborah so she could knit me that hat. So I don't have
That's exactly what happened.
And I can't say anything.
So now
about
I
it.
Have the pattern, and I have instructions to knit her option B.
in gray and pink.
Gray and pink. So the pattern is called New and Elegant Brushed Mohair Hats by Mary Maxim. And I don't know if the company Mary Maxim is a Canadian company.
I'll look it up.
But I have a feeling it might be.
I don't know. But I am very excited to get the
hat.
Well,
while you look it up, why don't I talk about the hat a little bit?
Oh, it is a Canadian company, and they seem to still be around. You can still buy things.
Yeah, I haven't heard much from them in a long time, though.
But, like, how long? Like, ever?
Well, I don't know. Like, I remember seeing Mary Maxim patterns and books when we were kids. But I haven't seen anything in a long time with that name on it.
You didn't knit as a child.
Don't you remember Mom having stuff around with the words Mary Maxim on it?
No.
Okay, there are three hats here, and Melanie has ordered option B. But option C is the funniest, actually. It's tall enough to go over. It looks almost like, what is that? Oh,
beehive.
Like a Shriner's hat. Except it's not red. But you know the Shriners have those hats?
Like a fez? It looks like a fez.
I guess it does, except it's to go over as a beehive. And it's striped going up. So horizontally there are stripes, and they've obviously put some very, very, very fuzzy yarn in the stripes. So it looks actually like a beehive. I don't know what it looks like. It's hilarious, that one. But the one Melanie chosen is, I think you first work the band around it, and then you work in the round to make the center, and then you sew it together. It looks quite classy.
Yay.
So we picked Angora, an Angora wool blend for that. So it'll be nice and fuzzy and warm for my Schwester.
Yay.
For my Schwester. And how did you know that giving me a pattern and ordering me to knit you something would make me so happy?
Because I am that good.
You are that good.
So I actually have a knitting story. It's not actually about me knitting anything because there's too much. It's summertime. It's really not knitting time right now.
And you're not much of a knitter.
I think if I would knit if I were on bed rest, maybe, or if I were in jail.
If someone had a gun to your head?
Yeah, maybe. But I
Well, you would want to knit in jail because then you could get. Actually, I've been thinking about that lately.
About knitting in jail?
Yes. I don't know why. Oh, no, I do know why. Because I think I read an article about how some jails are using crafts and et cetera to calm people down and, you know, as something for people to do to pass the time. And I was thinking, you know, if I were in jail and if they let me actually have needles, which I'm not so sure that they would let in a prison, it wouldn't be so bad. I mean, like, I wouldn't want necessarily to be in jail, but that way, you know, your needs are taken care of and you get to knit all day.
Wait, you're saying you get free food, you don't pay rent, you get probably regular amorous activities from
I'm sure
Spike.
With Spike, but still Spike. Girls got needs.
Needs are met by Spike, and you get to knit, but probably it would be acrylic wool.
It probably would be, but that's where you would come in, Melanie. You would have to supply me with a decent wool.
I'd bake you a cake with alpaca wool in the middle.
Well, I think that's the kind of thing that, although I don't know, is it rope-like? Would that be, you know, in case I decided that I couldn't take any more of it, like, would that be banned?
probably, well, I don't. Having,
no, but.
I don't know.
You but maybe, like, the craft, maybe the craft center at the prison would hold the yarn and the needles for me and from one day to the next so I don't hang myself overnight. Which, if I were in prison and I could knit all day, I am so sure that I wouldn't be anywhere close to hanging myself.
Really? Because I thought but, if I had to knit all day in jail or out, I would be knitting a noose to hang myself.
Oh. Knitting a noose. No, that's not funny. Yes, it is.
It also, but also, it can be quite dangerous in jail because you could shank someone with your knitting needles. And if you don't know jail
well,
term,
actually,
shanking is
it's very
savvy.
True. And I was trying to think, I was trying to decide whether they might permit someone to use knitting needles. But in the article that I read, I guess the prisoners sign them out and sign them back in. So, and they're very careful about counting.
And if there's blood on it when you
I
sign it
hope,
back in, then you don't get your deposit back?
Well, as long
back.
As they get it back.
Okay.
Right? As long as they get it back. But I had a whole conversation in my head with myself about this.
Did you answer?
Oh, I was wondering whether I would be permitted to knit things for myself or if they would just be like, no, you have to give everything you knit to charity. Or to knit to, like, could I knit presents for other people, like for Spike? You know, would they say that no donated wools, blah, blah, blah.
So
not that I wouldn't want to knit for charity if I were in prison. And not that I'm going to prison.
So when you're in bed before you go to sleep at night, the rest of us imagine all sorts of unmentionable things and you think about how awesome it would be to be in prison because you could knit without work getting in the way.
It may have crossed my mind.
Okay.
But I don't actively want to go to prison.
I'm sure it could be arranged.
I'm just saying that if I happened to be in prison, I think Martha Stewart may have knit in prison.
Martha Stewart probably decorated
seen
her.
That mentioned somewhere.
She probably decorated her prison very nicely.
With lots of doilies and homemade flowers and such.
Did you know that when they tattoo people in prison and they make the thing to tattoo people, they make it out of doorbell because it vibrates. The vibrating part of a doorbell.
I didn't know that.
I know. See? Learn something every day. Anyway, I don't exactly remember how we got to prison, but I mean, we're not in prison.
No, we're not in prison.
But I was in the country the other day, actually, with my parents going after some. We had heard there was an alpaca farm that had sort of an open house where you could see your alpacas and buy alpaca wool and buy alpaca fibers or whatever. And so we thought we'd get some for my sister. And
can I interrupt for a second?
Probably.
Okay, the house that we grew up in, our parents' house, is just on the edge of, well, it's pretty much just on the edge of a suburb of the city of Edmonton. So it goes Edmonton, and then the suburbs that surround it, and then outside of that, there is a whole lot of farmland. Like, for hours and hours and hours and hours, and not that many hours, I guess, but for many hours. And within 5 minutes from leaving our house, it's possible to get all the way into the country and into farming areas. So every summer, farms have open houses for people to come and pick their own berries or people to come and visit the animals. And so this is what you guys were doing. You were going for a jaunty ride in the country to go see some pretty animals, right?
Well, we were going for a jaunty ride in the country to buy you some pretty wool for your birthday, but sure.
No way. Okay.
We were driving down the road on the way to the alpaca farm, and I wasn't so sure if I wanted to go because A, it was kind of far, and I was hungry and grumpy, and B, hungry and grumpy, and
when Melanie gets hungry, Melanie gets grumpy.
No, well, maybe it's just that.
But it's okay, because then it's easy to make you ungrumpy.
A drive in the country.
You just have to feed the beast. Okay, so what happened?
So I wasn't so sure I wanted to go to the alpaca farm because they were also serving alpaca meat, and like, who wants to eat alpacas? It's super cute. You don't want to eat them. Maybe you want to eat them, but I don't want to eat them. So we were heading to the alpaca farm, and we thought, you know, we do want to see some alpacas today because it's a good family fun time to see some. And then all of a sudden, barreling towards our car was this giant beast monster. And my dad said, oh, look.
What was it?
Well, my dad thought it was a horse. And my mom said, oh, it's not a horse. And we didn't know what it was, this big black woolly beast monster. And we looked up, and all of a sudden we noticed it was an alpaca.
No way. Running on the road?
Running down the road towards our car.
How exciting.
Yelled.
You didn't have to go to them. They came to you.
I know. So my mom sort of slammed on the brakes. My mom slammed on the brakes and I hopped out of the car with no thought of danger to myself.
Well, the car was still moving.
And I ran to the alpaca. I love
right
you.
After you put on your Indiana Jones hat.
I wish I had an Indiana Jones hat.
Do do do
do do do do do do do do
do do do do do do do.
And
okay,
I ran right again, no thought of my own danger, right to give the alpaca a big hug. And the alpaca didn't, it was a baby alpaca, but it was actually really big and it wasn't very pleased. And it kept going, oh, oh.
I hope you make lots of those sounds.
It was very unhappy, and it was obviously wanted to get somewhere, so I ran down the road chasing this alpaca, and it sort of made its way to this fence a little bit further down the road, and suddenly three huge alpacas ran to the fence to see what was going on, and one of them was white with black splotches, and my mom thought that would be a male alpaca. And there was a brown one, and then also...
Not because of the black splotches or the whiteness. It was because of its size,
because
right?
of its size, not just because...
Okay.
It, because of it...
It had manly colors.
Yes. He was the biggest, okay. And then there were two other ones following behind, and they got to the fence, and they leaned over, and they were going... And the baby was going... And they had lost their baby. I don't know how this baby got out, and so we weren't sure what to do. I got on.
Were they together at the fence, or where was the baby when the
they were together
were
at the fence? But it was a double fence, so they couldn't actually touch each other.
Oh, so they could see the baby through the fence.
There was about 2 feet.
And the baby
before,
could see them.
Yeah, there were two fences, so they were about 2 feet between the fences. So they were leaning over, and the baby was trying to lean over. So it's like in the zoo where there's a safety fence and then another fence.
Yeah. Okay.
So they couldn't quite make it, and the baby was kind of thinking of jumping the fence and trying to get through the fence and running back and forth and back and forth, and it was so upset.
He wanted his parents.
Going, oh! So my mom and I ran at this alpaca trying to make sure it didn't run away further down the road and sort of trying to corral it. We didn't know where, but then my mom, almost as bravely...
Brilliant as she is.
She was almost as brave as I am on a daily basis. She opened the fence, I chased the alpaca in, she slammed the door shut, and we sat there aglow with our own... Greatness.
Pride?
Pride. Wonderfulness.
Greatness. What happened once the alpaca got inside?
Well, the baby completely...
Once the alpaca.
The baby completely forgot that it had ever been scared or gone. It just started grazing on the grass. And then the other alpacas kept rubbing on him with their cheeks, like, oh, you're back. And they kept going, and it was so cute. It was so cute.
What a great story.
And we assumed that the alpaca belonged to that farm, because if they didn't, that farmer's going to be very surprised next time he goes into his field.
He's got a new alpaca.
A new full-grown baby alpaca.
Like a new adolescent alpaca. Jeez, where have you been for the last 3 months? For my birthday, I have invited my knitting group to come over here to my house. There was no better way that I could think of to celebrate my birthday.
Wait. Okay,
let me rephrase that. There was no better way that I could think of celebrating my birthday where I am in my current situation, which is I don't know very many people, and I don't have any friends here yet.
Oh, I'm sure you have friends.
I do. No, it's just I don't know that many people, and with the swine flu, nobody really wants to go out in public places, and I joke about how I have no friends, but it's really not true. It's just that, you know, when you come to a new country, you don't know very many people, and it takes a long time. But that was a joke. But anyways, I invited my knitting group to come over, and they'll be here in 23 minutes. And I told everyone to bring, their knitting, but the invitation said, come over for some wine and bring your knitting. So I will be drinking wine, and even if no one else is.
That's my sister.
Hey, that's me. I'm Elash. No, but it's my birthday.
It is your birthday.
I get to have a glass of wine. And we're going to have a knitting party.
Ooh.
And actually... Some of the people I emailed but that weren't able to come, they were making jokes about, you know, how good our knitting would be after a couple glasses of wine. People here aren't big drinkers, actually, even with all the wonderful wine and such. People here don't drink excessively, which is pretty comfortable, actually, but it's a cultural observation, I guess.
Three Little Kittens, from the book On the Treetop by Clara Doty Bates, published in 1881, courtesy of the Gutenberg Project. Knit, 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 see old white-capped pussy sit, fairly gray with worry and care, in her little straight-backed rocking chair. Knit, 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 till she's tired of it. Why does she work so? Look and see, there in the corner children three, plump and furry and full of fun, a good-for-nothing is every one. And all those kittens must have mittens. Weather is cold, and snow and sleet make it bad for their little feet. and they dare not peep outside, because Jack Frost stands ready to pinch their paws. That's why she sits and knits and knits. If by any chance she drops her ball, and if one of them chases it at all, she peeps out over her glass's rim with a savage, dreadful scowl at him, and cries out, "Scat! You saucy cat!" Or if her long tail gets uncurled and sways but the least bit in the world, and one of them makes a roguish nip at it, or plays at mouse with the tip, somebody hears a loud boxed ears. With them 'tis hurry, scurry, and play, or sleep in a round coil half the day, while crickety creak the rockers go, and the mittens grow and grow and grow, so shapely and fast they are done at last. She summons the kittens. Each one stands while the mittens are tied on his clumsy hands. Then her glasses drop to the end of her nose, and her wits go wandering off on a doze. And as never before does old pussy snore. Suddenly there is a noise of feet. Rattle and clatter and patter and beat. Old puss makes a flying leap from her chair with a half-awake and startled stare, striving to see what it may be. Helter-skelter the kittens appear. "Oh, mother dear, we very much fear that we have lost our mittens," they cry. "You have? Then you shall have no pie. Lost your mittens, you naughty kittens." Old mother puss is dreadfully cross, at the spoiled dream first and then at the loss, and with floods of tears down either cheek, each frightened kitten tries to speak. "Mew, mew, mew. Mew, mew, mew." A smart cuff over their little brains is the only answer the mother deigns. "Not another word from one of you," it means so without more ado. Ashamed and slow, away they go. Again she settles herself and sleeps. This time she dreams that she crouches and creeps, a great gray tiger along the grass, while herds of soft-eyed antelope pass. Then patter, patter, "Now what's the matter?" Again with a scramble the three appear. "Oh, mommy dear, see here, see here, we have found our mittens, see," they cry. "You have? Then you shall have some pie. Found your mittens, you nice, nice kittens." She goes to the oven, there is a pie, she sets it out on the floor close by. 'Tis smoking hot and covered with juice, and she says to them, "Eat as much as you choose." So up to the chin they all dip in. Dame Puss goes out to wash her paws and to comb her whiskers with her claws, when again the troublesome three appear. "Oh, mother dear, see here, see here." Distressed and shy, they begin to cry. No wonder they cry. They did not wait for a spoon or knife or fork or plate, but ate with their fingers. "Ah, how soiled," Dame Puss declares, "the mittens are spoiled." Mew, 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 mew. Then all run out to the rainwater tub, dip in their mittens, and rub and rub. Their knuckles are fairly bare, and wet as if drowned is every hair. Still over the tub they rub, rub, rub. Once more they haste to their mother dear. "Oh, mommy dear, see here, see here, we've washed our mittens clean," they cry. "You darling kittens, to wash your mittens," she says, and fondles them till they're dry. Purr, purr, purr. Purr, purr, purr. A number of thoughts popped into my head when I first read this poem. My first idea is perhaps a little bit strange, but I suppose since I'm speaking to other knitters, maybe you'll understand. I first thought, kittens? Don't scrub those mittens too hard because they're going to felt. Okay, so then I reasoned that the water was fairly cold and that the kittens probably didn't have the strength to actually felt things by hand. But it was still a concern. Then I imagined how much work it must have been for the old cat to sit and knit mittens for three children. I mean, two mittens are hard enough, but if you think about it, one mitten for each paw times the number of kittens, it means that she knit 12 mittens. And based on the picture in the children's book where I found this, she did it all on straight needles. Now that is an accomplishment.
Okay. I really relate to the cat's reactions to her, the disruptions in her knitting. I get irritated also when I'm concentrating on a project and I'm interrupted. And I completely understand the feeling of having my yarn ball tugged on by an animal. I guess I have to explain this. This is literal. There's a lovely park near my house, and lots of people bring their dogs there to play, including me. Sometimes on the weekends, I go there with my doggy, with a picnic blanket and my knitting, and I go there to relax for a few hours. More than once, another dog has seen a ball-shaped item from the distance and has come running for it in a beeline. I have indeed experienced the horror of losing my wool, which was still attached to a project, to the mouth of a Rottweiler. That is a horrifying split second, and I've been faced with the decision whether I should hang on to my knitting and risk breaking the wool and losing the stitches off the needle, or to let go and then risk seeing my knitting being dragged across the park trailing behind a dog. For the few times that this has actually happened, I opted to hold on and to tackle the animal to get my yarn away. What is a little Rottweiler when a girl and her yarn risk being torn apart? Okay, back to the poem. What struck me the most about this poem was the lack of respect shown by the kittens for their newly knitted gifts. That poor cat. She's still resting after having knit 12 mittens, and they're already lost. And then, even though the day seems to have been saved because the kittens eventually found their mittens, then the kittens go and eat pie with their mittens still on. Seriously, were these kittens born with no brains? In my opinion, the cat showed quite a bit of restraint when she heard all of this terrible news. Actually, this poem reminds me a little bit of a rerun of a Christmas episode of The Office that I watched last week. Phyllis Lapin Vance, I think? I looked it up, and that was the name it showed on Wikipedia. And actually, by the way, Wikipedia has a photograph of her, of the character, showing her knitting. So it's made it all the way into Wikipedia, the fact that she knits. In this episode, she gave Michael, the office manager, a hand-knit oven mitt for a Christmas gift exchange. Okay, in the show, he dislikes the present so much that he changes the rules of the gift exchange in the middle while they're exchanging and basically begs someone else to take the present so he won't be stuck with it. As a knitter, well, I guess, and as a reasonable human being, I found this to be particularly appalling behavior. Not only that, though, but the theme of finding people unappreciative of knitted gifts is sometimes something we knitters unfortunately face. Actually, I think we face it far too often than we deserve. It's no secret that knitters are known for their tendency to give away items that they make. We clothe friends and family in woolly goodness, and it seems second nature for most of us. Okay, of the projects that I've knit in the last 6 months, let me think. I think I've given away a hat, 3 bags, a scarf, a dog coat, although I gave that to my dog, so I don't know if it counts as giving it away, a dog blanket that my dog also got, a baby blanket that did not go to a baby of mine, since I have no babies, and 2 different Afghans. The items that I've kept for myself is 1 Afghan and a sweater, which I had actually intended to give someone else, but I decided not to at the last minute because I didn't think it would be appreciated. So, anyways, the point of this is to show, of everything that I've knit, most of it has not been for me, and I don't think that I'm alone in this tendency. I've always had this thing about presents. I don't expect others to give me wonderful gifts, and I don't spend tons of money on presents, but I've always taken quite a bit of pride in choosing good presents for people I care about, and I get completely disappointed if the person getting the present doesn't make a big enough fuss over what I give them. I really, really, really enjoy seeing the positive reaction that people have when I give them presents. This started way before I became a knitter, and since I've started knitting, it has become much, much worse. Before I was a knitter, I would put effort into picking a gift, buying it, wrapping it, and then giving it to the recipient. Usually this took me no more than maybe, 3 hours of time invested? Now, I choose a pattern, I choose a yarn, I knit for hours, I tear out my knitting, I knit some more, I finish it, I block it, I wrap the gift, and then I give it to the person. Frankly, knitting is hard work. If you think about it, knitting, let's say, a sweater for an average person takes, well, it's so variable, but let's say more than 30 hours of work. An Afghan takes me more than 90. If instead of knitting a gift, I were to work those hours, the 30 or 90 hours, at a paying job for the same amount of time, and then if I spent that money on a gift, it would be an incredibly generous gift. Seriously, would I spend $1,000 on a baby blanket, on a shawl, on a birthday present for my brother, on a Mother's Day present? Really, it's very unlikely. But for some reason, I'm willing to spend the equivalent in time working on a special present to give them. Why is that, really? I've been thinking about it, and I think that part of the reason is that I derive a lot of pleasure from the act of making an item. And the pleasure is not only in making the item, but it just makes me so much more excited to see my work appreciated in the end. I guess the bigger effort that I make, the bigger personal investment that I have in the present, and the greater sense of pride and satisfaction that I get when I see somebody enjoy a gift that I've made. Because of this, sometimes I think that I should choose my gift recipients carefully, so that only people who will appreciate my wonderful knitted gifts are given wonderfully knitted gifts. Sometimes I think that I should knit only for myself. You see, I think this, but I still knit for other people, and I still agonize over if others will like my presents or if my work is good enough to give away. I still make presents, and I don't really throw them out, but I throw them in my, well, maybe someday I'll turn this into a rug pile. But see, sometimes I'm actually really rewarded for my efforts, and people really love my presents. And then other times, a lukewarm receptions make me rethink my choice. Maybe I should limit my knitting, but I have a really hard time doing that. You see, after all, I am a knitter. I guess I don't really have a final message for this piece. This was for me more of an exploration of my feelings on the issue. Oh wait, but there is one thing I did learn, through the poem and through my musings associated with it. I think that today's lesson is to always keep precious knitting away from destructive kittens. Actually, maybe it's best to avoid puppies. And now that I think about it, maybe keep your knitting away from toddlers with scissors, just to be safe.
It's neat and it's sweet, it's a ding-dong treat. Knitting socks for little feet.
Just knitting with your knitting all day long.
You know, knitting's friendly and knitting's fun.
Knitting's good for everyone, and that is why we sing this knitting song.
Let's knit one purl, two. What's a knitter gonna do?
Since I forgot last time, I think I must remember this time. If you want to reach us, we are at www.savvygirls.ca. That's SAVVYGIRLS.ca. You're welcome to leave us comments on our website. We love comments, especially good ones. And if you want to, you can also email either of us. I'm at Deborah@savvygirls.ca. Melanie is at Melanie@savvygirls.ca. And our podcast administrator, who is Andrew, he's at podcast@savvygirls.ca. So any of the three of us would love to hear from you. Tune in next week. We love having you listen, and we like talking.
Silly without lime green stripes?
Well, don't shout.
I'll shout if I want to. And do you know why?
Why?
Because I hate knitting.
Wait, I gotta get some spit in your throat first.
Okay, you spit up and I'll just wait. And the baby?
I like that.
And the baby? That's good fun. Now can you do that and make it talk?
I just did. Didn't you hear that?
I didn't understand. understand what he's saying.
Mommy, I want my mommy. I want my mommy. My